With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, taking the passion of a nation to a whole new gear.
Today's show is brought to you by Renault, official car partner of the GAA. With a proud tradition in Ireland, Renault are committed to supporting those who give everything to the game on and off the field. And after another hard-fought road to Croker, they understand as well as yourselves how important it is to enjoy the journey. That passion for what drives you extends to the time you spend on the road, and with that in mind, head to Renault.ie/GAA for access to special motoring offers exclusive to GAA members.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on,
Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Hi, folks. How are you all doing this morning? You're very welcome to the Irish Examiner 2019 Hurling Podcast. Hard to believe we're at the end of the year. We're here from the Clayton Burlington Hotel, Winners Hotel. Fair buzz around the place this morning, fair to say. Finals are for winning, really, aren't they? Like, it's a fair contrast out in City West this morning, but we're here. Jerry and Derek are here. Hopefully we'll have Ken Hogan along there when he gets the full Irish down his neck in a few minutes. But funny one, lads. Weird finish, I suppose. An awful lot of people talking about the sending off. We'll get to that. But the second half was kind of, I suppose, once the second goal hit the back of the net in the second half, it just seemed to fizzle after that, and there was no way back from it, really. That's just the way it seemed to me.
Yeah, I suppose, no doubt we'll come to the sending off deal, as you say, but, you know, at half-time, the fact that I suppose a tip had, you know, did 15 minutes to think about their plans for the second half. It didn't happen, you know, halfway through a game or a second half where you kind of have to react to it. They had time to plan it, time to think it out, see what they were going to do. And obviously the tactic of putting Colin Barrett back, you know, as a sweeper. Kilkenny, you know, didn't change their style any really. They played very much down the centre, down trying to lob the ball, trying to hit Finlay all the time. And they would have been much better off to try play the wings and keep the ball away from the sweeper. But I think the fact that they had half time, they had 15 minutes to think about it, gave them a chance to plan for the second half, and they were always going to be up against it.
Yes, fair contrast there. They're like we say, they had the 15 minutes to talk about it, think about it. Like when John McGrath was sent off in the semi-final and they're nearly in the worst position, they had to kind of do it from the line in play. Like, I thought they didn't make a great fist, to be honest, of the halftime. In terms of what I would have been saying was, let's stay in the game here. Let's not concede goals. I mean, the second goal, the space for it. Like, and let's try and spook Tip. Do you know the way they spooked Wexford? I thought they were, you know, they might have brought another man back, I would have thought, and play four forwards to make sure they stayed in the game for another 15, 20 minutes. But effectively, 15 minutes in, we were in a situation where it was game over. Like.
And the irony is, Dale, that's what they would normally do. And the other irony is that they were keeping the ball in the first 20 minutes when they had 15 men. And when situations dictated that they nearly need to keep the ball better, they started reverting to kind of long ball. You know, when they had 14 men, I think that was kind of telling in itself that, you know, that normal kind of, we say John Donnelly and TJ Reid and Walter, that space they were occupying in the middle third in the first half, there was nobody evident in that area then in the second half. So, yeah, it's interesting from that point of view. But the other interesting thing for me was, I was kind of saying to myself, Jesus, is Colin Barrett the right man to be sweeping? You know, should he be marking? I was kind of, you know, you're in your own head, you're saying, is this a risk? Would you normally free up Paddy Marr? But then I was kind of saying, aerially, they were competing, perhaps Walter Welsh went in on the edge of the square and Finlay was there with Ronan Marr doing such a good job, so it was spot on. But it goes to show how wrong you can be, because I was kind of saying, Jesus, Barrett mightn't be the man for this sweeping up. But then I was kind of thinking, Mick Ryan had played him in midfield, he'd play in LIT midfield, he's a hurler as well as a marker, you know. And I think that was very evident in how he played. He had the speed to get across the ground and all the other guys were matched up well. Pádraig Mara come over and Walter Welsh was doing him well, and when Seamus Kennedy was doing better on John Donnelly. So it was like Darry Egan, Tommy Dunn, Eamon and Liam said at half time, listen, what's working for us? Who's the most likely to, you know, all the matchups are working, so let's free Colin Barrett. So a good move, but Kilkenny a little bit naive, I felt.
Yeah, and just on that, like, you know, they started right playing long ball in and Barrett was there course, I put my 2 feet in at half time and said Barry Heffernan will definitely be playing the loose man. Thinking he's
go.
A halfback.
Yeah,
you
there
know?
You go. Yeah.
I'd be doing it. Aaron Markin, definitely. Barry Heffernan would love it, I thought. Yeah, you know? And grew into the game, to be fair to him, in an individual basis, anyway. But again, I thought that was a result of like the Paddy Deegan long balls in, the one Killing Buckley miss hit in. I thought that was a result of the two goals, really. Like, do you know that? They got caught out straight away, a goal after 2 minutes, 14 men, then it gets inside the heads, and then you start lumping. Do you know? And I thought that there was no way of playing through the lines, through the wings at that stage, that they needed a goal, and the best chance of getting a goal was Colin Finlay. But of course, on the matter was Marshall, and that superbly, and then with the men in front of him.
Dale, I remember in the 17 final, we chased in the back of lead 4 points ago. We started going completely away from our own game as well. We normally be trying to keep the ball there, lumping it in, Galway half forwards coming deep down the field onto the break, and all the space seems to be on the other side. So it's probably just a case of you wouldn't associate it with Kenny, like chasing it, you know what I mean? And when you're chasing it, you tend to kind of make decisions that are probably not the right decisions, but probably natural decisions all the same.
Yeah, you're definitely under pressure. Like when you're chasing a game up there, and you know the occasion and the atmosphere and everything, all of a sudden, you know, you're a man down. They get a couple of goals. You're on 5 or 6, 7 points down. Like, you know, and it's very hard to keep your composure and keep your, you know, keep to the game plan. But over the years, Kilkenny traditionally have been that very direct, very long ball. They don't like playing through the lines. And I think that, you know, I think just a bit of panic, I'd say to you, if you were to ask them this morning, how would they change it and play it again? They probably definitely would, you know. But I'd say Finlay was in there, but like he was on. Ronamar had an outstanding game. They had big guys inside there, you know, Barry Heffernan, big man. Break the ball and Cathal Barrett there to sweep.
Well, Chichar, you know, it started so similar to the Limerick game, didn't it? Like we... I was there in the box saying, Jenny Mac, this is a replica, like yeah. 8 points to three.
Yeah.
Colin Finlay, I suppose, John McGrath somehow found himself back there.
Yeah.
In fairness, John McGrath, I thought it was a great bit of improvision because Walter completely outfielded him, charged on goal. Ronan Maher had to come, but he went straight to Colin Finlay, smelling, you know, that Walter would have to offload, that Ronan wouldn't let him past him. And a great hook.
Oh, the hook was just
unbelievable.
Like to the, in that situation, start of a game, you know, if Kilkenny had got a goal of a start of a match is a huge lift, you know, and it was a fantastic hook. But, you know, even though they had a couple of chances in this first half, Kilkenny had 2-1s or 3-v-2s where they didn't normally, they were content just maybe to tap it over the bar when they had chances for to go for the juggler, when they were on top. And, you know, every team gets a spell where you have that. You have your golden spell where you're on top, and you know that was highlighted last night again. A couple of chances where they could have went in, could have got a goal or two. And if they got a goal or two when they're ahead, you know that might have been pushed on. And the game turned. You know, even last night the switch, as you said, Derek, last night the switch over. Actually, Paddy Mark caught a couple of great balls. You know, over Walter Walsh, which is not easy to do. And then the as a result, the goal came from that play that Paddy caught the ball. And I think once you felt that they'd got the goal, I think the whole, everyone around us was looking like, now tip have settled, now they're going to open up. And even before the incident of the sending off, they'd gone a point ahead. The whole game had turned in that 15 minutes, I think.
Yeah, and like, I thought the analysis was great from the tree last night, Derek, to be honest. Like, it was great stuff. And that was something that, you know, you just said, Paddy had been comfortable enough on John Donnelly. And, you know, but I suppose Shamey Kennedy was struggling a bit with Walter. And he thundered into the match, and Paddy likewise. And
yeah.
It's a weird one. It's a weird one when you're playing wing back and you get 2 points and your man gets 3 points. No, he'd one of them scored already, I think, like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think my mother would be too happy with that scenario. She's what's your man score?
Yeah, and I think
I don't care what you scored, you were in the backs.
Yeah. And Donnelly was very influential that first 20 minutes as well. They were just coming as deep as he was. He was getting on a huge amount of ball. And he was kind of setting the template for how Kilkenny were going about their business. So Porrig was good too at the same time, but you know, I think Kennedy kind of charged forward and a little bit more as he was over on Donnelly, and obviously the physical matchup between Porrig and Walter was probably more so. The interesting one for me was the Killian Buckley tracking of Noel McGrath, which is, I think we all kind of felt during the week in the run up to the game and how wrong we can be, that Conor Brown would perhaps would take Noel McGrath's athleticism. We were kind of saying he'd picked up Dara Fitzgibbon, he'd picked up Keane Lynch, will he follow Noel McGrath around the field? And then, you know, Noel McGrath had a pain in his hand hitting the ball. The amount of possessions he had. And then I was kind of saying to myself, you know, and in fairness to Killian Buckley, who was only coming back from a serious injury all year, is nearly chasing form and fitness all year. And I just thought it was a strange one, you know. You know, Noel was very, very dominant in that particular battle, I felt, you know.
Yeah, and we touched on it on the pod, in the preview pod, that we thought maybe Tip would have an advantage in the middle of the field. But like, like Brian gets all the plaudits he deserves, and you don't win what Brian has won as a manager. But I just thought, like, for 48 minutes, that was sticking out like a sore thumb, like that Noel McGrath was nearly running the show around the middle, and Killian was playing chase. He was 4 yards off him all the time, and Noel McGrath with a four-yard start, she might as well not go after him at all, because he's not going to waste that space.
Yeah, I'd say, I remember talking about it during the week, I actually felt to go the other way, and I said that, I think he might have just went with the experience of Killian Buckley on Noel McGrath rather than the inexperience of playing Conor Brown. But again, I suppose looking back on it, you've got to make the call. Hindsight is a great thing that you can look back and say, maybe we should have done this. But Conor Brown has been the man marker for in their previous two games. Noel McGrath was the midfielder to close down. You know, he was the one to do it. And even when I wasn't working after 10 or 15 minutes, I felt they could have swapped, you know, fairly quickly, you know what I mean, and say, right, let's give this a go. And at least the pressure of having to start on Noel McGrath was off Conor Brown. And now he could go on and maybe do a job at him. You know, it is this cause. We've all been in a situation where we make calls before the game, and you look at it, you try to get the matchups right. And I suppose Tip would have looked at the matchups in the half back line, and it took a little switch half or two of the first half to make the difference, you know.
Yeah, in fairness to Conor Brown, Michael Breen started well, but Conor Brown did a fair job after that, and I thought battled as hard as he could, put himself all over the place. You know, he mightn't have been on a whole pile of possessions, but I thought he
But of the two players, Dale, there's no doubt McGrath is the way more influential in the team. Breen is, we have a workhorse, and he works away, gets a couple of scores, but McGrath is the general. He's the man that gets, you know, he's in the middle spraying the ball. And I think for their own point of view, the influence, you know, his brother's up in the forward line, he's his senior player, he's a real leader within that team, it looks like, you know. So I think the fact that he wasn't closed down, you know, and then when you get into the game, very hard to chase it, and then he was on the ball from the start, and his confidence began to soar, like, you know what I mean. So he's a super player.
But even during that period, I allow for the conditions as well, no lads. I mean, they were like the showers were wicked at times and that. But they had a couple of terrible wides as well, Kilkenny, hadn't they? Like Walter had one, Paddy Deegan had one. I mean, you wouldn't see him missed hardly at club level, you know. I know conditions were bad, wet, hurly, and slippy, but I mean, they really could have been in a Limerick situation in that stage. And you rightly highlighted the switch and Paddy catching that ball and then the goal. And Desi Cahill was sitting in front of me in the box, and I just said, Hurling is mad. Do you know? All of a sudden, the whole thing is just turned on its head, really.
Yeah, it's and Gerard said it already. Even when they had their foot on their throat, it was most on Kilkenny, like with a couple of goal scoring chances, whether it was John McGrath's hook on Colin Findlay, or whether it was Richie Hogan had a pint and he had Colin Findlay inside him just to maybe throw in a ball at the last minute that they would normally go after, you know. And I think it's, and he alluded to it, a couple of wides. And yeah, look, to answer the question, I suppose it's just the ebbing and flowing of it. And then when the sending off came, for me, there was an absolute feeling of inevitability. The first time I was at half time in an All Ireland final, saying to myself, it's over. You know, I know that sounds very anticlimactic, but that's the way I felt, even. You know, that it was. Not that you wouldn't. The fight that you normally associate with Kenny wasn't evident. It's more so that you felt that at some stage, Tipperary will be able to use this space with the forwards that they have, you know, to open them up. The problem for Kilkenny is that the goals, I suppose, came so early in the second half, and there seemed to be, you know, teams are accused of down and tools, if you like. You know, normally I would associate with Kilkenny with being a little bit more resurgent than they were in the second half yesterday.
Yeah, and it kind of went back. We'll touch on the sending off in a minute. I suppose we can look at it from all sorts of angles and views and everything. And I must have, last night, got 1,000 different views on it anyway. Everybody I met had a different kind of a way of looking at it, but like it went like 16 after the sending off, didn't it? The space and the angle balls to Callanan, and you know, they were able to just get the run and pop the little balls outside bubbles and that kind of thing, and the array of skill in and wrist work that they have then just came completely to the fore.
Yeah, I thought just looking down from the stand, definitely the Kilkenny half back line were being dragged up the pitch an awful lot more in the second half. John McGrath went to centre forward for a period of time, and I think people, again, subtle little changes where he was able to get on the ball, little dink passes when he was receiving it, huge space inside for the full forward line. And we said it all year, these guys are lethal when they get a chance. And you know, I think bubbles really opened up in the second half, like when they had the space, there was just balls being planted in, because the balls was going up and it was nearly coming back down straight away. It was like ping pong for a while. Now, Tip, when they get a chance, when they smell blood as well, like they put over some, they got some magnificent scores yesterday. You know, huge score again in that Ireland final, 325, like fantastic scoring. Even, you know, when they started slowly, you know, in for the first 10 or 15 minutes, they were, you know, we were looking at like they were out of the game. But I think the second half, little subtle moves, letting bringing McGrath out, putting bubbles, moving in around bubbles, went to the wing, went into the corner. Then after that, there was just huge space created inside it. And I think again, Kilkenny, probably, you know, your game plan goes out the window when someone is sent off like that. You're now chasing the game. And I think that, I think like Derek, I was at halftime, I don't think there was any way back for Kilkenny. And like, and as you say, once the goals went in.
Yeah, the direct opposite there, I would say, and you highlighted last night, like, was Kelnan's, you know, could have taken a point probably to push it out to 5 or 6 points, would lifted the head and went for bubbles on the edge of the square and one touch and finish, where when Richie got that ball, Finlay was gone inside and a little, you know, throw off a pass there. There was a goal. There was that little difference in them yesterday.
Yeah, and I think we used to try and do that more. We used to call it the extra pass. When you have a handy point on, have a quick little glance for the extra pass. There wasn't much huge evidence for us over the years, but even if you go back to earlier in the year, you know, you had Bubbles pass to John McGrath when the handy point was on against Cork. You know, you had Jamie Callanan's pass, I think, to Jason Ford against ourselves in Waterford. Just this handy little hurling pass. Even the first goal yesterday, John McGrath and Jason Ford have a little bit of interplay. There's a handy point on. Next minute, they smell a bit of blood and Jamie Callanan ends up, you know, getting the goal off. And yesterday again, Jamie has a handy point off his left, just as a quick glance. And I think that's, you know, apparently the hallmark of Eamon and Tommy Dunn's kind of whole kind of, you know, mantra around looking for that extra pass for goals. But they're assassins. They have the players to be able to execute those, you know, those finer skills, if you like. And I think there's a lesson in it for all teams that, you know, you have a handy point and next minute the extra pass comes. And even on the whole Bubble situation, I felt, again, looking at it, that he was very lethargic in the first half. I thought to myself, Jesus, he's not right. Like, you know, he had a point, he had a shot from his left-hand side in the first half. I think it drifted wide and he got the next ball and he kind of ran with it a bit. It looked like he had too much time. Michael Dugan said, you know, he had too much time almost. But then when he got the point from the sideline in the second half, you know, it just settled him. And when they hum, like, very hard to counter.
If you talk about that extra pass, Derek, like the skill level, you know, the ball that Shane McCannon hit off the ground, yeah, wet day, like the control of it,
yeah,
it was absolutely brilliant. He killed it, didn't take it into his hands and put it away. Like, you know, I think sometimes we can kind of overlook how, you know, it looks so simple, how hard that is to make, to control that ball at the edge of a square. You know, in a split second, you take your eye off it, it's gone, the chance is gone. And like, he's been doing it all year. Right? He's got fantastic hands. But as you said, to be able to, like, we saw Shane McCallum, just quick look, and he played it to him. Like, he did, that ball carried pace,
yeah,
and it went in there, and it was absolutely, you know, the control of it, touch, great goal. Like, you know, so it was, he's been doing it all year. Like, and as you said, that extra pass has been the hallmarker tip.
And like, yeah, he we've seen that ball played across and been butchered so many times, yeah, by Conor Forrest, and then you're on the sideline, you're saying, why didn't you put it over the bar yourself? But when you have a guy like Bubbles inside, like, you know, that's the difference.
It's a bit like the goal against Cork as well. That's kind of come from the same side, the goal, the ball came across from Catlin, or the game against Cork from John Edward to John McGrath again. When it's finished off, it looks so simple. People say, isn't that brilliant? Like, but to be able to not take your eye off the ball and not lose control and be able to finish it, hallmark of a great player.
Yeah, glad to say we're joined after the scrambled egg by the great Ken Hogan of Lana, as me all Murray Hurtig used to say. Ken, was the scrambled egg nice?
It was a scramble, all right.
it'll be a scramble down there all day.
Well, when Larry rang there, it was a fair scramble to get down here, Ken.
First of all, huge congratulations, Ken. You know, I know you've 28 of them now, like, but they're sweet when they come along, aren't they? You know, no matter what. I see a couple of papers this morning, people on about back-to-backs. I was saying, who gives a living shite this morning about back-to-backs? You have that Liam McCarthy and that's all that counts. Sweet feeling.
Yeah, that's all that counts. And most of us have lost more than we've ever won. I can tell you that, and as you well know. But you're all from successful clubs. But, you know, when you come from Laura, we're right up there between Boro and Portumna, and tis sweet, you know, victory for everybody. But I suppose yesterday was, you know, an amazing day. The weather conditions, you know, were crazy at times. And then, obviously, the incident with Richie, which, you know, was unfortunate, changed the course of the game. Probably, you know, every hurling man would acknowledge that. And but Tips display in the second half, you know, tour de force, really. And you're mentioning Bubbles there. I was talking to Bubbles last night. And Shamey said to him afterwards, remember that now, Bubbles, I give you that one. In 2016, Bubbles got a brilliant goal. And if you remember, Bubbles ran through for a goal right afterwards and he should have thrown to Shamey. Yeah. And he didn't give it to him. So he says to Bubbles, remember that, I give you that one. So Bubbles is like a proud peacock here last night, walking around, getting that goal, that pass from Shamie.
I tell you, them forwards never forget, do they?
They don't.
Like, it's even yesterday off air, the 2008 final where Kilkenny absolutely put on this massive display against Waterford. Painful one, Derek. No, sorry for bringing it up again. But I was on the panel the Sunday game that night, and we couldn't really pick a man in the match. It was such a complete display, so we gave it to the Kilkenny team. But Brian Cody accepted it, and Shefflin says to me yesterday, "Oh yeah, that was the one you gave to Cody." Did you expect it yourself, Henry?
It still lingers.
Well, come here. What is it with the young lad in Hawkeye there? What's going on there? Is there an appeals committee or anything you could go to?
Or what is it with Hawkeye in Tipperary? I don't know what it is. But
he was adamant last night. I saw the 2 years ago last night.
He seems to be adamant, as I said to Brian afterwards. Just Brian, you could be wrong, you know. But he seems to be adamant that, because he said, "I was making full sure that I wasn't behind the line, or the hand wasn't behind the line." And do you know, he actually spoke to me. We were out in the garden there on Saturday, and he said to me, "You know, we're talking about catching ball." And I said, "You know," he said, "someone had mentioned maybe bring the ball down to Hurley." And I said, "No, Brian, you don't bring the ball down to Hurley." And I said, keep catching. Like, it's absolutely amazing coincidence that it happened again. Yeah. Like, you know, Groundhog Day. And I suppose from his point of view, he did pull down one in the second half with the Hurley. Yeah. I suppose he had learned his lesson. But he said he was, I said, "Jesus, Brian, you looked, you know, bemused. You were sort of smiling after it." And he said, "Dad, I was fit to cry." You know, he was fit to cry, because when it happens a second time, as Jerry, you know, in the goals, it can affect your confidence. You know, you can say, "Geez, what's going on here? Are the gods against me?" But thankfully, it worked out, you know, in the end.
I know the play didn't go on for 32 seconds this time, but I have to say, everyone around me was staring at James Owens to see would he get a signal, like, because obviously it's a far end of the field where we are, and you don't really know. I mean, you sometimes you look at the monitor when it goes that far up, but it didn't look anything like as clear cut as the last one. But there's gas. At least this time there was no goal buried in the back of the net down the other end. Anyway, it was innocuous enough out the field play going on at the time. Like, but it's gas. Look, the sending off, I suppose, is huge. Something I'm sorry about yesterday is that we didn't highlight the tackle Kyle Barrett put in on Richie Hogan earlier. The one he went to control, and he's Hurley, and he came around and he actually caught him on his nose. Now, I say the reason we didn't highlight it was there was no yellow card awarded for it. Like, so. But I'd say there might have been a bit of that in the system. Human nature and the heat of the battle and being what we are might have been in there in our heads a bit, that Richie said, "Oh, you got me," like, you know, and we could see a couple of verbals between them at that moment, and maybe that led on. And something I felt we should have highlighted anyway at halftime yesterday. I suppose halftime goes so quickly in that studio, between they're doing this bit of analysis, that bit of analysis and everything, and hard to cover everything, and obviously the sending off had to be covered deeply. But I thought there was something we should have looked at. I mentioned in today's column, all right, that he was a bit lucky earlier on. Probably wasn't the red card now, to be fair to it, but it was a high tackle, or you know, face guard high pull, really.
This morning was the first time that I saw the incident that you're talking about, because it wasn't being at the game. You don't say anything back, and last night it wasn't highlighted. Only Cyril said that you know he mentioned the thing of retribution of what had happened, and we didn't see it. But the minute you see it this morning, that's a definite yellow card.
Yeah,
that's a definite yellow card. I hadn't seen it up to now.
Yeah, and the answer maybe lies in the fact that it's a yellow card as opposed to a red. So, you know, we talk of retribution, you talk about a fella's gander being up on the back of a bad tackle, yeah, but I think ultimately there's a difference between the two tackles, in that Carl's tackle at best, in my opinion, was a yellow card, whereas Richie's tackle was a red card. So the analogy or the comparison, you know, while it's relevant, I suppose, in terms of a fella's mindset, I don't think it's relevant in terms of saying that, you know, Kyle should have been sent off, or, you know, initially. I'm not saying that, but it's a relevant factor, I think. It's a factor in terms of a guy's reaction or Richie's mindset heading into the tackle, I think. You know, heading into the tackle where he was sent off for, I think, as opposed to a factor in the overall flow of the game in terms of whether it should have been equaled out. For me, at best, it was looking at Kyle's tackle, albeit he clips him across the face guard. I think it's more of a genuine attempt to play the ball with the hurl than I think Richie's one is just, you know, it's just a nailed on kind of red card.
Yeah, what saved him, in my opinion, he should have got a yellow, I think, for sure. But what saved him was that Richie didn't take the ball in his hand. He controlled it on the Hurley and it went out from him, and he went to take it back in with the Hurley. So if you're the defender coming from behind, your natural instinct is to get a flick in. Mm. And of course, sometimes that can come up across the face guard, and that's what happened, I think. But I thought it was just important that maybe we point that out today, because it got little enough coverage, you know. I actually saw Billy Keane commenting on it, and he's probably watching it down in Listowel, nice and chilled out. He was on about the Listowel races and stuff. But no, look, the sending off then, I suppose, look, on the stroke of half time, I suppose, all but and we touched on it before you came in, Ken. We said, you know, that we never were at an All Ireland where we felt it was inevitable that the result was only going to go one way after a sending off, and yet Tip had a man send off in real time against Wexford when they were in trouble in the game and adjusted. But the sending off, harsh, real time, what was your thinking on that? I know you've probably the benefit now of replays now, like, but at the time, I presume you were up doing commentary with.
Yeah, and the monitor was in front of me.
Okay, same here.
And it was only when I saw the back of Richie coming towards Cottle, that's when I saw a sort of the elbow raise, you know what I mean? I didn't see it in real time, but once you saw the comment, you know, from behind, when you saw Richie coming in, you said, oh, genie, you know what I mean? You said straight away, because we know Richie's a little genius. He's a great hurler. He was frustrated. He'd done a brilliant weave and run, and normally he'd slap it over, and it went wide as well. And, you know, Brian Cody looked irate on the sideline because Richie always seems to get the rough end of the stick as well from Brian. And it was amazing that it actually happened under Brian's nose, right out beside him. And you've often seen it yourselves when the mentors are on the sideline or when the manager's on the sideline, you're right beside him. You want to go that little bit harder and tougher. And you know what I mean? That intensity was there because Richie, you know, an absolute magician with the ball, you know what I mean? And an absolute great hurler. And it was definitely frustration, Anthony. It was definitely frustration that caused it, you know. But you mentioned about being inevitable then. Like, funny enough, I saw Sean O'Brien warming up after 25 minutes. And I think, not being an absolute expert or foreseeing, I think Seamus Kennedy was in bother at that stage on John Donnelly. John Donnelly had got two great pints. And Seamus actually had turned his back to one of the puck outs and John caught it over his head. And Sean O'Brien, and the next thing, Seamus flew up the field and got a tremendous pint. Mm-hmm. And then, after that, Seamus Kennedy was contender for man of the match. Mm-hmm. So, as you well know, it's a break of a ball. It's just one break in the game that gets you into the game. And, you know, Barry Heffernan, you know, we met Roney and all the boys from Inter, unbelievable party, but like Barry Heffernan, the catches, Seamus Kennedy in the second half, they were absolutely awesome, yeah. You know.
Once they settled, like, I mean, even Barry, when he came out with that early ball and him passed it straight to TJ, you're saying, is this fella having All Ireland mayors here? Like, and it looked to be going Kilkenny's way, but like, Jerry, you in real time, I suppose, you definitely. I was beside Shefflin. Desi was in front of me, Shefflin was beside me, and in real time, I didn't, because from where the RT box is, as you know, Derek, you're literally on the line with it. And we said, yellow here, and yeah. And then the monitor. And the first three angles, you couldn't really say, but it was that angle where it's coming from the Cusack stand side, and right. Richie's back is Toya, that I thought that the elbow definitely was raised in the last second. Jerry, you didn't think it merited a red?
In real time, we were up in the upper Hogan stand, right above the incident. And but I suppose, again, the frustration from a spectator's point of view at the match yesterday, they didn't replay the incident, and nobody saw it until after the game, because you didn't see it at halftime. After the game, it was only that fourth angle that you'd see the elbow on the shoulder, you know, having to go for it. I just think that, you know, it was split second. It was absolutely split second. I think taking into all the stuff that Ken said about retribution and the point that he'd missed and all that, you know, he was on the line, like, you know, he was looking for a reaction, and he went to take Cahill, shoulder him over the line, and the whole thing would have been lifted right in front of Cody as it is. And it only takes it just a split second. The conditions, the rain had come down. I just thought at the time it was very harsh, and I just think that, you know, from the point of view of that, there was other instances in the game as well, and back over the years, as Derek's going to say later on, you know, there's other ones that have got away, you know what I mean. But to the letter of the law, I suppose, and at the start of the year, there was an introduction of head high tackles, but I just, at the time, when I saw the fourth angle last night, well, yeah, but I thought it was very harsh of the day.
Yeah, like, I was just saying, I met so many people last night, went up to the Boar's Head, RT, had a bit of a wrap-up party. Obviously, I'm so fresh-looking now this morning that I didn't stay long, like, you know. But Darren Farrell was so impressed with me going away early. He wanted me to do the news at 7:30 this morning with him. I said, Darren, go away. But, no, like, you know, everybody had an opinion on it, and lads saying it ruined the game. But I just have to take away that from it, don't you? But with Gas, before you come in, Ken, we're using all the old bit of technology we have here with the iPhones, and we were looking back at the Carl Barrett tackle on, and then your man here is able to produce the 2008 tackle by Larry on Owen Murphy, yeah, which is nearly a replica of yesterday's.
Yes, it's probably nearly the exact same tackle. 2008, Davey wired on the line, if you like, and Waterford wired playing Tipperary. Took him down the semi-final, and Lar, a very kind of innocuous kind of high, a head-high tackle, if you like, on Owen Murphy. Owen Murphy's panned out in the ground. Dear McCarron awards a yellow. If you like, but look, I think that it's moved on to so much conjecture and debate about refereeing styles now, that the head high thing was well flagged. You know, it was well flagged at the beginning of the year. Pádraig Maher's tackle on Tony Kelly resulted in a straight red, I think, the first round of the league this year, and down in Thurles. Now, the other argument against that would be, has there been incidents during the year where fellas have been hit head high and not received a red card? I think there was one with involving Peter Casey and Ronan Maher, I think, in one of the games. You know,
in the Munster final,
I can't remember. You know, so you're looking for that level of consistency. But I agree with Gerard. First time I watched it, you know, I said to myself, Jesus, no. But when you watch it, the third or fourth angle, whatever it is, it's a conclusive red for me. And I think it's the right decision. I think it was the right decision. And you know, we talk about, we should have taken the conditions into account. We should take the day itself into account, and that it ruins the day. But ultimately, I think it was still the correct decision.
Yeah, and I suppose, look, as we touched on just before King came in, the two goals early in the second half, really then, if you were a neutral and you wanted to get onto the M50 before the two sets of supporters, you could nearly have gone. It looked like there was no way back. You had Cahill. I mean, we speculated on who the sweeper might have been, like, back there, but they made a great call, and Cahill, he did it superbly. Like, I thought it might have been Barry Heffernan. Mm-hmm. You were saying Derry Cooley.
You could put Ronan Maher there. Yeah, you could put Bernard Maher, Pádraig Maher. Any one of the lads would be well comfortable playing that sweeper.
Cahill was outstanding at it, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, Ronan had an important job, Gerald.
He was there on
the edge of the square. It was a big call. A lot of Tipperary people would have said, don't sacrifice Ronan at full back. You know, because we need him out in the half back line. But again, Brendan was out in the half back line. Responsibility lay with Seamus Kennedy then to sweep up behind Paddy. But do you know, you maybe have harped on it before I came in, but when Tip were in big bother, I have to take my hat off to Bill O'Mara, as we call him. He's affectionately known as Bill. It was an unbelievable goal. He showed great Lee Rodri to go and head for that net. He turned in, he turned out, and he put it away brilliantly. Because Bill has played 5 to 15. With Tip, minors, 21 seniors, and he'd be the first to admit he's not a great finisher, but it was some finish, and Tip needed that injection just at the right time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was passing out a challenge match on Saturday there between Kilmacota and Burr, and I was passing out towards Barzacane. I see a big picture of, I don't know, you called him Bill now, but Niall,
up there
in Kilran country, I suppose.
Our crony. Don't get caught speeding there.
But you know, I was only saying it when I met Richie Stakelum at the. And that's coming from you as well, Ken. Going to stick in my craw now, I'll tell you. It'll be off the accelerator, Dalo.
Who's control, Dalo?
Fishing the ball.
And I see the speed man, I say, oh boy, Ken.
Who's control, Dalo?
Still caught, no doubt. But if there was no speed van there, I'd get caught. I saw a massive picture of him up, and I just sent to Richie when I got to the match, how big is Kilran McDonagh's? I was saying to him, like, yeah. Do you know, I would have associated it with being the other side of Nina, if you like, on that way, but it goes right across that side, doesn't it?
That's Tom Maloughney country. He was ill. They mentioned him yesterday. He played in the 60s. That's Tom Maloughney country, our crony, you know, and they have a little pitch there on the side as you pass by there as well. But Bill, you know, to score that goal at the critical time when, like, I mean, we were looking at 23, 24 minutes because I was only there as analyst at half time, so I was really observing what's going on. I said, no score from play here from our forward line, you know. And I said, what's going to happen next? Where are we going to get this score? And, you know,
you need
Bill delivered.
Decisiveness, George.
What was so impressive for me was that it's Owen Murphy's top tax keeper, and from a keeper's point of view, once that ball hit the deck in the conditions, it just absolutely flew into the net. He had no chance of stopping it. Like, and whether it was meant or whether it was unintentional or whatever.
It was just after the big
shower.
But
to hit the ground,
well,
it was after to hit the ground, was brilliant. It meant it was absolutely it showed he was thinking, you know, hard to beat on Murphy, like, when the ball is in the air.
What I loved about it as well, Jars, Jason Ford had a big part to play in it as well. Like, because Jason Ford could have, you know, taken two steps to the right and had a shot for a point and possibly would have scored it with his skill set. But he said, something on here, got it inside to him. Now, he had an awful lot to do when he got it, but What I thought was awful clever was he jinked to the right first, yeah, which is his strong side, obviously. Then he went back to the left, and Conor Fogarty says, I have him where I want him now, even though Conor Fogarty was kind of all over the shop in terms of where his body language, you know, he was just caught like wrong sided. But then he got back onto his strong side on the run, and was the finish like a low bullet.
Yeah, and it's something we talked about Saturday or during the week. Not the supporting cast, you always associate Tip, you say to yourself, four, John McGrath, Bubble, Shamey Callan, the four assassins, and then a fella pops up on All-Ireland Day, perhaps unexpectedly, like Niall O'Mara, you know, and Dan McCormack, if you like, kind of working all around the field. But O'Mara, very dangerous forward. Even go back to the league game this year where Tip played Cork, I think they'd come back from a week in Spain, and they obliterated Cork in Parky Ring, I think. And O'Mara was very strong that day. I think he's a very underrated player, you know, a different kind of, very direct and sets up a lot of play. And it's good to see a fella have his day on the day of a final as well that perhaps hasn't been as heralded in the run-up to the final.
And he probably would have struggled to make the team if they had Bonner Maher available to him. He probably would have been in the starting 15.
It's probably him or Dan fighting for that spot, would it? If Bonner would...
Bill actually went off the panel last year through frustration with injuries and not getting an opportunity. And he was, you know, totally frustrated because he's a real heart-in-the-sleeve guy, you know what I mean? And Derek, you summed it up great because you have your artists and your stylists and you have these guys that can do the things that nobody else can do. But we needed someone to funnel in for Bonner and build it that, you know, with huge aplomb. But overall, like, you know, Mikey Breen getting the pint early on because Mikey had a stop-start year. Things weren't going for him. And then getting the two yellows against Laois, you know, it was after coming on. And it was a big call for Liam Sheedy to put Mikey in there again. Listen, Mikey, we have faith in you, you know. And he scored the huge pint and he made one magnificent fetch. And it was one thing that was in local circles the whole year. People were talking about Tip. Nobody's catching the ball out of the air. Nobody's catching the ball out of the sky. What's going wrong? But yesterday, you know, himself, Barry, Seamus, Kennedy, Paddy, Ronnie, they were all flying out under the dropping ball, attacking it with venom, you know. And, you know, overall, I suppose, it's just Tip, the Wexford game, lads, whether we like it or not, it was the big changing point. It was the big changing point for this team because it gave them that impetus, that belief, and that trust in each other that no matter what happens, we were going to do it, you know.
Yeah, huge doubts there in that match. John McGrath going off. I suppose there's a moment in every player's mind on that field at that stage saying, we're gone here unless like, and living in the moment now, just that moment. There's John McGrath, one of our talismen. He's a goal getter for us. He's our main man inside in lots of ways. Now, of course, you have Shane, you know, there's a lot in there, but John McGrath, he's gone. Like, fellas had to look at themselves so hard there. The management as well, the changes they made, it really was a turning point in the season. I know they did the heavy lifting early on in Munster, and they made sure last year wasn't going to happen to them again this year. They did drop a bit, you know, which is, I'd say, part and parcel of the system now. We'll talk about that in a minute. That you can keep up full throttle nearly all season with this system.
Did you mention Johnny McGrath's hook, by the way?
Oh, we did. I'm sure you did. We did, because we said, what was he doing there, number one? But we said it was brilliant that he realised that Walter would have to offload, and he went straight for Conor Fenley.
He mentioned it last night to me, actually, that he actually lost the ball. That's why he went back.
Walter caught it over his
head. Yeah, so he lost it and he had to go. He said, I knew there was trouble. And that's the only reason he was back there, you know.
But be able to execute it just goes to show, play a bit of everything, Lockmore, don't they? A bit of hurling, bit of football. He finds himself in that situation. I'd say maybe could be a wing back in the football, is he?
Midfielder, actually.
Go away. Yeah. We talked about it before you came in, Ken, just to say we have to go back to it a little bit, like how Kilkenny became so one-dimensional in the second half. I think the stat was 22 puck outs, and they only retained 4 in the second half, which was kind of amazing stuff, really. Like, they didn't, from where Tip worked it against Wexford, you know. They moved with each other. They kind of swarmed up the field, short passes, pop passes, got it to the shooters, which is a huge thing in the game at the moment, didn't they? Get it to the shooters. Some guys aren't shooters, like, you know, you wouldn't have associated Jamie Kennedy now maybe with a shooter, and he has his day yesterday, and that lob has happened, but in general, you get it to the Noels and the Shamies and the Bubbles and that, but Kilkenny just seemed to, they went for a goal. We need a goal. It became all about Colin Finlay and really Ronan just had to do his job. He did it brilliantly, but he didn't have to win it even clean. He knew Cahill was there in front of him.
Yeah, and Brendan mentioned it today as well about the puck out strategy. And if you're talking to Eddie, you know, and obviously they have huge respect for Brian, but there's only one plan. You know, if you ever say to Eddie, what's plan B? There's no plan B, Ken. it's a, you know, win at all costs. And right through the years, they had that belief in themselves that they could do the business, win the dirty ball, win the hard ball, take their scores when they needed them. And it seemed that way yesterday. And Derek, I suppose you'll be a master tactician. It seemed that way yesterday that there was no plan B. Whereas Tip obviously regrouped at half time. And, you know, that's where the backroom team come in a big way. And that's where I think Eamon O'Shea would have come in a huge way, because he would be a master tactician as well as regards setting up the team and saying, now this is the way we're going to play.
And an interesting thing on that was what I noticed on the sideline was, and we all associate Eamon O'Shea with this creation of space.
Where he
he's
is,
below in the backs.
Same from the very start of the match in Cork this year. Yeah, he was I spotted the same thing. He was down with the backs. And normally you see Eamon O'Shea up, obviously looking for space and all that. Obviously his role, whatever it is, whatever in the group, he was down in front, outside the half-back line, all through the match.
Yeah. And I thought, especially because he was nearer to me, I suppose, in the second half, that he was down, you know, even talking to Brian about the puck outs, talking to Noel McGrath to make himself available, Cahill to make himself available, and they worked it very well from there, like, right through.
Yeah, and the other thing is the versatility. You know, Barry Heffernan going in cornerback on AJ Mullen, you're kind of saying to yourself, will he be comfortable there? And then he just, you know, he laps it up, if you like. And there's an incident at the end of the game where Shamey Kennedy takes off in a sprint against Billy Ryan. And he absolutely just glides past Billy Ryan, who's a flyer. So I think there's been an injection of pace into the Tipperary backline with Kennedy and Heffernan as well. You know, I was saying to myself, even in the run-up to the game, they played Heffernan and they played Shamey Kennedy the last end. They omitted James Barry because they know Kevin Foley is going to be free, we say. So they know they're going to have a free man against Wexford. And now, will they change it? Will they go back to Barry? The versatility with Ronan going back to fullback. You know, I saw him playing against Ballygunner in the Munster Club there last year at fullback as well. So he'd being able to kind of marry that with still charging forward from the half back line, I think that was key for me as regards to Tipperary. Look, they have the hurlers as well. They have the players once they flow and once they hum. Like, they're a serious outfit, you know.
Yeah, you one of the first pods we did this year, you said that we'll go on him now. You said that Liam Sheedy said, like, that they were fifth in Munster at the moment, and you started laughing in the studio down in Cork. You
they
said,
fifth, "Who's Paddy Powers?"
There were no Paddy Powers. The only one was on to then yourself.
No, and listen, look, it wasn't in any way being. I think Liam Sheedy, and you know him better than me, and I wrote about saying that he was in with us at De La Salle in 2012 when we came down for the county final. Just unbelievably inspirational man, leader. I mean, we all know that. But I think Brendan Cummins said something last night that it was a calculated risk on his behalf. He would have known as well that the general perception is that Tipperary had a low ebb. So I can drip feed the media now on this. You know, we're outside Munster, we didn't qualify last year. You know, I heard the word doldrums last year. I wouldn't accept that. I think it's probably a little bit of an insult to Michael Ryan in terms of last year. You know, Jake Morris gets that goal last year against Clare, and we could be talking about Tipperary being in an All-Ireland final this year. So sometimes I think we can contrast too kind of harshly, you know. And
1-16 and Joe Kenning's famous point in 17.
Yeah, and that's been absolutely respectful to what Liam has done. The one thing I would say is that, yeah, so they drip feed that kind of thing, oh, we're outside the top five. And I'm saying to myself, hang on, Shamey Callan, John McGrath, Bubbles, Jason Ford and two other forwards, saying, Jesus, this is serious enough. And a re-energised team with Liam coming in. And I think there's also Liam's whole, you know, 9 years out of it. What has he done? You know, chairman of the Institute of Sport. I think you have to look at the Tenio role in terms of, well, like when they were announced as a sponsor to Tipperary, I think the Tipperary chairman said, they're not just a jersey sponsor, they're a strategic partner. And I'm not equating it now with success or money with success, but I'm making the point that there seems to be a kind of real joined up thinking in terms of, you know, hard work, but a professional business template. And it gleams art of delegation, you know, trying to, you know, not manage, you don't have to manage O'Shea, Tommy Dunn, Dara Egan, Owen Kelly, all managed under the one umbrella. Brilliant delegator, obviously, and him leading the whole thing. I think there's a lesson for everyone in that.
Yeah, and that old stupid comment I always thought I would never go back is gone out the window anyway, definitely with this one, isn't it?
Yeah, but as Derek said,
So Derek should be getting ready there, should he?
What about Dalo?
Get your own boots. Yeah, but as you say, it was probably calculated in the context of him going back. Like, there's still great players there, and he obviously had an affinity and an affection for those guys. And probably, you know, having won an All-Ireland with those guys, it probably would have hurt them over the years that, you know, they weren't getting the recognition that they should have gotten. Their character was questioned over the years, and he still obviously saw that they're not old in age terms, like, you know what I mean? But Hurlingham's have a lot of experience behind him. But I think it was crucial yesterday. I think straight after the match, he didn't go to Cody, he went straight up, he called Eamon O'Shea, Tommy Dunn and Darry Egan together to form together. So it was very much the collective in that point of view. Obviously, he's in charge, but he surrounded himself with great people, great coaches, and it was very much that unity it felt was absolutely huge.
And obviously with Brian, he probably tells you nothing anyway, Ken, but you might have some, you know, you'll probably have a closer knowledge of, you know, the setup and the commitment level and the single bloody single mindedness of them in the year.
Like. Yeah, an amazing trust within the group, and you're well aware now, but like particularly Brian, as a son, he doesn't tell you too much. But his admiration for the lads and his respect for the lads, and like you mentioned, Liam second coming, but Tommy Dunn second coming as well, lads, as a coach. And you know, I had Tommy as a coach with the 21s in 2010, chair, and I was blown away by him, by his intensity, his willing to work day and night, bringing guys in for extra sessions. And you mentioned the group, Derek, like there was a group of almost 40 players there. Conor Harmsey done his ACL last November, the very first training session on the 16th of November, and he could have said, thanks Conor, good luck now, I hope you get well and get your rehab done and you're up, we'll look after that. No, he was kept there right through. Patrick Bonner, you know, a huge influence on the situation. But Tommy Dunn, the Saturday sessions with the 14 guys that weren't involved were even tougher than the sessions during the week. The lads would tell you that. And, you know, one or two of those guys came flying through. Seamus Kennedy was part of those Saturday sessions. Mark Kehoe, you know, Gerard Brown. And eventually it paid off for those lads, and it'll pay off for somebody else. You know, we didn't see Jerome Cahill yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, they have a big weekend ahead of them as well. But I'm so thrilled for the Tommy Dunns. Sheedy mentioned last night, you know, he walked into, he found it tough enough to get management at the start, that he walked into the school with Darry Egan, into the national school. And Darry is a principal now at 33. And he couldn't believe the presence he commanded in the school, the way he walked around and the presence he had and the respect and he said, I'm onto a good thing here, even though Darry's only 33. You know, so from that point of view, as you mentioned, you know, that background team, the strength of his background team paid huge dividends, you know, when it came to the business end of the championship.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to have Tommy for two seasons with the Doves, and I handed over the coach, and I had been coaching 09, 10, 11, 12, and then I got Tommy, I think, about February of 13. And like, I thought Ryan O'Dwyer was on some TV or radio station on Saturday as well. I was listening to him, and he says, well, the way it was with Tommy, this is the way O'Dwyer had said, of course, if it was a shooting drill and it was your goal, like, and you missed your first touch, you didn't get a chance to go over and pick it up again. You were out. Get out. Get back to the back of the line. You'll get a chance again the next time round, you know. And that'll be Tommy. And myself and John Milan himself would have taken the Railway Cup in the last couple of years of it. I know you wouldn't get much training done with the Railway Cup. But even myself and John were blown away with the, you know, he had him doing puck out games one night. Anthony Nash in one goal, Darren Gleeson in the other goal. And you had to hit a zone in the half forward line for play to continue, and it was a tough enough night now, and Darren was into the wind in Morris Park and he failed to make it a few times. Out he says, Nash, you're you know, and probably Nash maybe had the advantage of the wind, and I was just zero tolerance of this is the standard you get to. I mean, this was three Wednesday nights before the Railway Cup was all we were doing, but that was Tommy and that was his way of doing it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you look on the outside and Eamon O'Shea is heralded so much, and not that it bother Tommy that Eamon O'Shea gets heralded, but I think, you know, sometimes a fella's role can be underrated within a setup as well. But yeah, look, great man, absolutely brilliant man. Just on a personal point of view, Ken, like being an analyst yesterday and having a son on the goal, what's the feeling going through? You know, I'd love to know, kind of, you know, obviously you're saying there, Brian, it mightn't say too much, you know, but like, you're in terms of watching it unfold, you're watching the game, you're analysing it, but are you kind of keeping a little kind of an inward eye or an eye to the left to see how he is, how his body language is, or is it, you know, it'd be interesting to know, and even the emotion afterwards, you know, in terms of winning and all, earning yourself as a player, and the correlation or the contrast and the emotion, I'd love to know.
Yeah, sure. Look at Derek. I did suggest to the local radio that James Woodlock had been doing a good bit of analysis, and I said maybe James should do the matches when the seniors were playing, and the minors, as you know, would be playing beforehand. So I said I'd look after the minor and James look after the senior, and then the lads came back to me and said, no, we'd prefer you to do the senior as well, Ken. So it was just one thing that borrowed another. But the Laois game, I actually went down and sat with Joan and the family, and in that game, it was a strange game anyway, you know, from everybody's point of view, and a very unsatisfactory day for Tipperary, really. But that's total disrespect, I thought, to Laois as well, because they fought, you know, on their backs, and they had huge impetus coming from the Dublin game. But Joan said, "You're never sitting here again." You know what I mean? because her ribs were sore. You know, because you are poking everybody. It's actually more comfortable, Derek, above.
Yeah,
concentrating on the game. Rather than focusing in on Brian totally, yeah. It's actually you're better off.
Which is only human nature if you did.
Yeah, you're better off at work, really, analysing and you know, obviously commentating on the game and things like that. It's more comfortable for me than actually being down in the crowd where someone had said behind you, you know, "For F's sake, Hogan, what are you doing? Yeah. Puck it long, as you know, probably most you've heard all that before, you know. So I mean, it's just a nice feeling. Emotions were fine yesterday, Derek, but the Wexford game, emotions ran away with me, you know, because that was, you know, it was such a comeback in such circumstances. And that was the day, I suppose, a lot of Tipperary people were emotional, you know.
It was a great achievement, Dale. I just think to acknowledge it, like 30 years on from father and son, you know, to have come to win two All-Irelands in 30 years apart. It must be incredible to be able to look down and see your son playing in the same position that you were playing, you know, and to win an All-Ireland 30 years later. So congrats to Ken, because I played against him for years.
Yeah, fairness, Owen. You know, I would have manned the line against you a couple of times. We never had a crossword, really.
not really, only in a hurling sense.
No, it was special, and you know, delighted for Brian and the whole family. It's great. And I think another thing as well, I think this Tipperary team, like, we go back to 2009 maybe, with a lot of them, like, I'm talking, like, the Mars, including Bonner, Noel McGrath, Shamey. I think they deserved a third medal, really, didn't they? I know the new guys got probably their first medal, maybe some of them their second, maybe from 16. But I think, you know, they've given us such kind of epics along the way. Some of the Galway games, even think about them, you know, brilliant games of hurling, brilliant piece of skill. And I was kind of delighted, I have to say, that they got that third medal. You know, that they, I think in the likes of Brendan Maher, like coming back from the ACL and, what a leader again yesterday, and pick up TJ, no fuss, just watching him walking around the parade and the monitor, looked as cool as a breeze, have a job to do and going to do it.
Yeah, probably we'd have all guessed probably too that Brendan was going to take up TJ, you know, because he's a master at that. And you know, as you well know, and I suppose we all heard it about Kevin Heffernan, he said he had to have 15 brains on the pitch as well as 15 men. And you know, Brendan's brain is working overtime, he's just that quicker, you know, in his thought and the way he thinks and the way he moves. And do you know, I'm biased in mentioning Patrick Bonner because of my own club mate, but we're broken hearted for Patrick Bonner because he came through, you know, he wasn't heralded as a star. He made that minor team on his own. The hair was down the back, long hair. He was agricultural in the way he went about things. What a man. Do you know, Declan Ryan and Tommy had him as a minor.
I'd take an agricultural few of those if I had him.
Yeah. What a man. The way he, you know, fine-tuned his game. And, you know, we talk about him in Lura because, you know, his uncle Eamon would have been a huge influence on him. But we talk about him, you know, he was brought to the trials. And I just remember, you know, a club man of mine saying, he says, you know, Bonner's a freak because his legs, his fitness, his attitude, he just had a will to win and a want to be there. And he's quiet, he's, you know, soft-spoken. But when he went into the pitch and he led from the front, let's face it, from the very word go against Cork, you know, ultimately against Clare and Waterford, he led from the front. And we were actually shocked that he got an ACL because his fitness levels, you know, and the surgeon couldn't believe it when he went for the op. You know, his legs were in such condition because he had worked in the gym every day. You know, fitness and hurling is a drug to Bonner. And I'm just hoping, please God, that he'll come back to his best again, because age, you know, it's only but a number. And with Bonner, it surely is, because the man is in absolutely superb condition. And he's example to all the rest of the lads as regards how you look after yourself, your fitness levels. But more importantly, I suppose, his humility and the way he carries himself is very important. And I think everybody fell for him there last night because of the fact, you know, that he wasn't part of the final lineup.
Yeah, well, I don't know who said it in poetry or whatever, Derek, you might have a better chance to know it. It's not men that honour titles. It's not titles that honour men. It's men that honour titles. And I thought when he lifted that cup yesterday, it was nearly the biggest cheer from the Tipperary crowd around the Hogan Stand area. You know, how much he means to the Tip public. He, I know Ken said he was agriculture starting off, but I tell you, some man isn't he, like, you know, yeah, not there yet.
Yeah, it's a reflection of not how the game's going, but the realisation from, even when John Hine, I remember, played in and Brian Whelan in one of the All-Irelands, I think 98, was it? All-Ireland. You know, how there's an appreciation now for the guy who brings something different as well. You know, and that's not downplaying Bonner's skill, because I've never seen him playing as well as he was up to the ACL, you know. And I remember watching him in the first league game this year, or the second league game between Limerick and Tip, down in Limerick. I was saying, geez, he's not going as well as he could be. But, and then come the summer, then he got a brilliant goal in Ennis, like, you know, and he was really, 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 as well as bringing what he normally brings, the hooks, the blocks, the tackles, the ordinariness of his approach, if you like, you know. And that's, I think that's the key to his character. Without knowing the chap, you're only looking from afar and you're kind of saying, he's an ordinary chap, like, no big headed, no kind of egotism. You just kind of, and it is only trying to read a situation from afar. And having the hurling as well, there's evidence that his, you know, the way he took the goal on the turn against Clare, he took it into one action around the corner and he was in on goal and finished it brilliantly. So, yeah, look, and no matter what anyone says and involves him over the probably last night, he'll feel it, but he'd still be, naturally enough, you know, it'll be eking away at him saying, you know, next year is my target.
Yeah, and that's the warning for everyone else in Munster. And, like, there's a lot of talk maybe coming up to it, just sussing out lads that Brendan might be saying after the SCL that might be the last year of it. But, you know, the way he hurled all year, you'd be saying, why wouldn't I go back, you know? Especially, and I'm going to touch on this year maybe, you know, and we touched on it last week, that Liam got a bit of criticism maybe all year for maybe not throwing in the Jake Morrises, the Joe Browns, all these guys. And yet then, in the Wexford game, when he was able to run him in all to contribute, now it was a beautiful place to be bringing him in yesterday, wasn't it, with the scoreline. But they still, like, the absolute pace and the agility of them coming on tired bodies was incredible.
Yeah, and then we said at the start of the year, we were talking about the squad and maybe that he was sticking. He was, again, I think he's a huge loyalty to the older players, and I think he was sticking by them and he was giving them every chance to make sure that they stayed on the team. And probably by, you know, maybe not by choice against Wexford, he had no choice to put the young fellas in, because with the last 20 minutes, he needed fresh legs. But they justified his faith, like, they came on and they all scored in the semi-final. Yesterday was a different situation. The game was won when they were coming on, and, you know, they could just go up and express themselves. But they still did it. They went in and they scored points, you know, at will, and they all contributed again yesterday. So, you know, even though he mightn't have given them game time early on in the year, he obviously was working away behind the scenes, building their confidence, and, you know, getting them ready for when the chance comes that they were going to be able to take it.
Will he definitely stay on, Ken? I know the last time he had 3 years done, obviously, and then he stopped the drive for five, and that, and I suppose, like, you're entitled to walk away. Would he definitely stay on, Liam? Like, because I think we all came out, remember, the week after the 2010 final, after that 21 demolition of, and I says, this is the start of another five in a row attempt here, because the talent looked unbelievable, like, but it just never came to fruition, I suppose, really. I mean, I'm very unlucky, I suppose, in 14 in particular, you know, and I suppose in certain games in the intervening time. But I think for their development, like, for having Liam around there now would be just, I mean, the 20s obviously very good, and obviously Liam Cahill, Mikey Beavins have a great, you know, relationship built up with this bunch of players right up from minor. But important, I think, that, you know, that he would stay on now. I know he's a busy life, and
and he mentioned that last night, you know, about his family. But and Derek alluded to Tenio as well. Declan Kelly is his best friend, you know. Declan is his best friend, and Declan mentioned to him last September, you know, Liam was actually consulted as who he think would be suitable for management for Tipperary. And sure, no more than yourselves, when he started delving in, he said, fake this, I'm going to go for it myself, you know. But he was on the golf course with Declan Kelly, and Declan said, you'll have to go back, Liam. And Liam said, I'll go back if you sponsor us. So there was no getting out of that one. And, you know, I think that friendship is very strong since they were two years of age. So I think overall he'll be barricaded in Simple Stadium. I think he won't be let away this time. You made a good point about the 3 year contract the three-year term. Liam got a lot of stick before 2010, particularly Gerard De Debolo and Cork when Satanta went to town. Right. He got a lot of stick from older managers, you know, of the Tip era, who mentioned the fact even that he hadn't walked the steps and things like that, which was hugely insulting.
You were the manager just before him, weren't you?
No, I'm afraid not.
I know who you're alluding to. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah, I'm well back. But no, it was absolutely amazing. Like, I'd say, Liam had such relief in 2010 to win that All Ireland with a great group of players with great management. He said, "This is, I have enough of this." You know the stress levels yourself, and particularly in Tipperary, you know, the expectations are always there. So I think it's a different playing field he's on this time. You know, he's acknowledged by everybody as, you know, the Messiah after coming again, the second coming, and to win an All-Ireland with those group of players. The bond is so strong now. I think there's no getting away from it at this stage. Again, he's addicted to it. He loves it. And, you know, as you say, Derek, all the experiences of working with the sports council and things like that have stood to him, you know?
I tell you, I say around midnight last night, a couple of texts came into the phone, like from romantic Clare fellas on night of the All-Ireland, with a good few jars, and I'm saying, if Sheedy can do it, you can do it, Dello. Come back, either come back. Like, they'll be the same fellas that'll be shooting you next June, I tell you. And I didn't win one the first time round anyway, so I tell you. But it's gas, like, it's grand at midnight tonight at the All Ireland after watching Tip win, the Clare lads saying, oh, come on, we can do it as well, like, you know. Well, come here, lads, to wrap it. I suppose, look, great job. We could chat all day about it, I suppose, and a lot of us will chat all day about it, and you'll probably be chatting for a good few days about it again. You know, we're 2 years into the structure, Derek. Do you know, and we've learned a fair bit. I think management, players, they've all learned a fair bit. I think it was a 3-year trial, was it, initially? So what do you think? Working, happy with it? Wasn't as good as last year, maybe, overall, no? Like, yeah, well, we got the romantic finish, yeah, of course, last year.
Wasn't as good as last. I think it's been tweaked from year to year, I feel like, year one to year two, and the break came in during the Munster Championship. The general feeling after 18 was the 3 week in a row wasn't working for a particular team, so they tried their best to break that, I suppose. I'm still of the, you know, the debate around the club and county fixtures. I'm still of the debate that maybe, perhaps, there's still an element of rush to the finishing of the final, even yesterday, you know, that the first week in September is still, you know, perhaps, you know, dominating my top rate process. But working in general, not working from a personal point of view, and that from Water, we didn't come out of the group the last 2 years. So we're, you know, am I selfishly looking for, you know, a crossover between Munster and Leinster at some regard? I always just, the Munster one is so cutthroat that for three teams to come out, you know, it's so difficult to be one of those three teams. And your whole season then is just a 3 week window in between the middle of May and the first weekend in June, and you're out of the championship the last 2 years in a row. But generally working in terms of the games, but I think the learning points for everybody, you know, in terms of possibility not having the semi-finals the same weekend and stretching it and giving a definitive club fixtures, even if it means those club fixtures are, listen, we're starting in August and this is when the club fixtures are starting. Not just like our boys in De La Salle, for instance, went back training the first week in January. They played in April and they didn't play. They won't play again. We'll say they played a couple of weeks ago. But I think, you know, that staggered season is not what they want. They just want the kind of a definite, you know, to be playing in August and then they can come back training in April or March or April rather than, you know, coming back January to play a kind of a staggered season.
I actually think Clare have a probably better system that way. You know, they played, there's two rounds played now. Mm-hmm. Everyone knew when they were going to be playing. If Clare got to the All-Ireland, that would have been the one shift in it.
And that's why, you can't have a debate about the inter-county season, how it went, without involving that, because it's just a kind of an elephant in the room, if you like.
Jer, for you, are you liking it, or?
Yeah, I suppose
you played in all the systems, I suppose, really. Like, did you play backdoor as well? You did?
No, I never played backdoor. No, I was well gone by then.
Not too far off.
It's balanced, Dello. It's balanced.
1 year, I'd say.
It's balanced. I think it's don't. From an inter-county point of view, look, as you say, as Derek said, I think at the end of it, it's very rushed. We've won hurling game in August, you know, and I think that I prefer a situation where, you know, that's a marketing point of view to promote the game. Hurling is now finished in inter-county level and there's no more. So, but from a club point of view, it's extremely difficult and frustrating from the club player when he's not sure when he's going to be playing. We have it slightly different in Cork, is that we've played around in April and now it's back again. I don't know, I suppose I'm being the old traditionist, like the All-Ireland final on the first Sunday in September, I still prefer to see the All-Ireland semi-finals on separate weekends. Even though we have, this year, the last 2 years have been brilliant, I still prefer, I think, from a marketing, I suppose, point of view and a promotional point of view, the more Sundays that you have playing, the better from that point. But again, if you're a club player and you know you're down there, you're watching this, you're trying to look after your club and trying to perform, it's very frustrating. And the fixtures committee that are meeting have a difficult job in trying to balance everything. And I think, but from an inter-county point of view, the question about the system and the competitions are working, it's been very good the last 2 years. Has been, you know, last year was the start was, or the year that was in it was incredible, and it was always going to be a challenge to be as good. But we had some great matches this year, really.
Yeah, particularly the semi-finals with Justin Trall, and like, but a couple of quick things on that before you go to Ken. You're on about the old system. I actually am a fan of the semi-final weekend now, because they're two separate days. I think it's a massive buzz in Dublin. I think we take over the weekend from football. My big problem is the Munster final and Leinster final on the same day. There's one I think people would absolutely love to go. But I was just doing a couple of notes in the hotel last night, you know, before I went out for an hour. why are you laughing at McGrath? but this lovely couple came over, and myself and your man had a great chat, but he brought over the young lad, Tommy, to sign the jersey. Signing tip jerseys now, can I tell you? This is an unusual situation for me anyway. But yeah. Like, nobody wanted me in the middle of it for, but he knew me. The young lad had no clue. But I said, half day tomorrow now for you. And Shaman said, no school, sure. Do you know, and that's our tradition, isn't it? We would associate that, bringing the cups to the school straight away.
Yeah, and I suppose, I think we're on dangerous territory at the moment with the club county situation. And you got a little bit of stick, Derek, for mentioning about the young fellas nowadays are bright individuals, educated individuals. But you have a great point, because these fellas are smart lads. We're all on social media. Everybody's communicating. Everybody knows what's going on. You know, with a Junior B game below in Waterford, we know the score if we want to tune into it. I think it's very frustrating. Funny enough, today, even in the month of August, trying to get hotel accommodation, there was just barely enough for the players. That's my excuse, Larry, for being late today, because we were over in Ballsbridge. We had to stay over in Ballsbridge because there's literally no rooms here. But I think I'd be with Ger. I think the 1st of September is All-Ireland Day. I'm a traditionalist in that viewpoint. I have no problem with the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. But from the club point of view, it's totally frustrating. I think it defeats the whole purpose, Derek, that De La Salle or Laura or Finbars or you know, Clare Castle will be back training in January. And here we are in September playing our first or second game. And guys, you know, the whole summer hanging around, you know, twiddling their thumbs. I think there needs to be a proper balance. I think if the GAA sit down, there's loads of guys there that can, you know, tease it out and eke it out and have a happy medium for everybody. But at the moment, it's totally unsatisfactory for the vast majority of our players, who are genuine club guys, and we have to keep the home fires burning. It's as simple as that.
They don't even go into schools. Just back to the point that was made, like going to the schools, like back in Tipperary, if you're going to the schools, the trip around the schools for the next couple of weeks, the impact that will have on kids playing the game. Whereas by the time if they go over to school, if the cup anymore, it's in 2 or 3 weeks' time, and maybe the whole thing is after, you know, its impact would have been lost. And I think it's all part of a bigger picture that I think that's, you know, again, the cup going to the schools is huge, like in the excitement and all that about it. Whereas now you've got to wait 3 or 4 weeks for it happens.
Probably agreed. We like the system, but the dates could be tweaked a bit. Yeah. That's the way to put it, I suppose. Lads, thanks a million. You've been the mainstay of the pod. Gerard, Derek, Ken, been with us so often as well, along with likes of TJ. It was great crack to have Kyle Hayes, you know, young hurler of the year last week. It was just a great buzz to have him there. I thought it was just to take us out of our own minds anyway, and bring it back to Kyle talking about a championship haircut on the Saturday before last year, you know. So it was great, and really hard to believe it's over already. It's just flown by. Huge congrats to you, Ken. Great champions of the year. Set your stall out from the 12th of May down in Cork, and deserve champions at the end of the day. And thanks very much out there for listening. Leave us a review, and we'll talk to you all soon.
With Renault, passion for what drives you. Official car partner of the GAA.